Backseat Book Club, Book 10, American Gods by Neil Gaiman. This is Scott.
And this is Lena.
And this is Pedro.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and this is Backseat Book Club.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Pedro.
Hi. How's it going?
So, as is our wont, being the first, your first appearance on this show, who the fuck are you?
Are you talking to moi?
Yes.
He knows who the fuck I am, so yeah, go ahead.
Well, we have hit our limit of talks for the night.
Well, my name is Pedro. I am a podcast editor, producer. I'm a freelance writer. I am the host and the editor for Chaos Theater on Mechatalk. I also occasionally appear on Gundam, though that is less frequent since I am now handling all of the editing for Chaos Theater. I also write for Japanator and Tomopop, part of the Modern Method Network. So I am desperately trying to get a job. So if you can hire me, hire me. And that's my pitch.
There you go. What kind of podcast is Chaos Theater?
It is a jack-of-all-trades nerd podcast. We cover comics, movies, games, anime, just about a ton, whatever interests myself and my fellow co-host, Chris.
Cool.
We just did a I'm currently editing our 50th episode, the a science fiction double feature of Iron Man 3 and Star Trek, which went on for 2 or 3.5 hours last night. So it's actually surprisingly fun to edit, considering that we had guest hosts for the episode. So it's pretty fun. But I am after last night's marathon session, it's amusing. I prepare for this next recording like I just did this, getting ready to go again.
Well, I promise we won't go for 3.5 hours.
I can, yes, this definitely going to be way more focused than that was. There was a lot to say about those two very, very different films. So I think we're all pretty focused with our topic.
Well, that, and you can always count on Lena to go, guys. I'm so tired.
Guys, I gotta go.
Last night, I had to almost forcibly make them wrap up Backseat Box Office because I had to pee.
You Davided the show.
Indeed, I did. They were just, Art and Jeff were just going on and on and on about games.
What's wrong with video games?
Well, when your show is about gambling on the outcome of the weekend's box office results, it's a little out of place.
Right.
Now, they were talking about different RPGs, which was fine, but I also probably drank a half a gallon of water, and I was sleepy.
Ah.
And I wanted them to wrap it up so I could turn in for the night, because I was tired.
If it made you feel any better, I knew that last night's episode was going to be a long one, so I prepared by having three beers lined up one right after the other. I tore through all three beers and then was left with a slight headache by the time the podcast ended, so I didn't even get to reap the benefits of my own preparation.
Well, that's just a shame.
I was very sad. I was just at the end of it like, why does my head hurt?
Do you have beer tonight?
No, I drank all my beer.
Well, see, as is appropriate for the topic this evening, I have prepared myself a mead.
Yep.
Oh!
I drink my mead.
You have all
I have
of
no
my
such, I have no such beverage. I'm drinking Cherry Crystal Light. It's really all I've got, because I haven't gone shopping.
And I didn't, like, go out looking for mead for this episode. I just was in the store, and it was $2 off mead. So I'm like, that is a good deal. I accept this proposition. And then I was leaving. It's like, wait. 1 week till book club for American Gods. This is when I will imbibe the meat.
I've heard of honey mead, but I've never had any
Oh, and to continue our new segment wherein I teach you how to make the thing I'm drinking, you just put some honey in a jar and you close it. Done.
And then it just ferments?
You put yeast in and then you just leave it for like 2 months.
That works.
And you come back and you drink it and it is delicious.
Hmm. Very good. And thank you for this month's lesson.
Yes.
Tonight, we are discussing American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Yay!
Now, should I let the listeners know my badness?
Yes. Yeah, you have to confess before the audience.
I'm fine. I have not finished it. I am just about halfway through. I got the dates wrong, thought I had another week, and this is not a book that I could read quickly. It's a slow read, but I'm loving it so far. So just so everybody knows, I have not finished the book. I've read up on it. I kind of know the storyline, but obviously there's a lot of details that I don't know about. So say what you will, tisk tisk, poo poo, what have you. I suck. I understand. But
it's
I'm here.
It's okay. I absolve you.
Thank you, dear.
All right. No. So high level thoughts on the book. Just two sentence summary of your impressions of the novel, Pedro.
Oh, that's gonna be hard.
well, that's one sentence down.
This is one of my favorite books ever. One sentence. It balances a lot of. I was just trying to keep this under two sentences. It balances.
I don't actually care about the two sentence limit.
I was actually trying to see if I could pull it off in two sentences, but it requires a little bit more.
There's an end dash and a semicolon in there, isn't there?
I'm just extending it, making it into a James Joyce-esque sentence that lasts for 39 pages. Never could read much of Ulysses. Anyway, yeah, so I first got into American Gods and Neil Gaiman in general when I first got into college about 10 years ago, and this was the first Neil Gaiman work that I read, and I tore through it, and then I immediately reread it because I did it a disservice by reading it quickly, because there's one thing that I've really learned about Neil Gaiman and his work, especially as he's gotten older and gotten, you know, just written more and more, is that I mentioned it before we recorded that he's a wordsmith. Like, he's one of these few authors that manages to take the English language and curve it and hammer it and shape it into exactly what he wants to talk about. And I, specifically, American Gods is a great example of this because of the way how he crafts this image of our world all, and the confluence and the combination of, you know, how ancient societies and gods and how they're clashing against what we believe in and what we take in on a daily basis and how they've become our own gods and how they clash. And I specifically at that time, like I didn't really have a good grasp of mythology in general. So later on, when I read up more on the different gods that he used, you know, I definitely gained a better appreciation for it. And subsequent rereads has just shown just how much I love this book so much.
Dig it.
All right. So this was not my first exposure to Gaiman. It was actually the Sandman Arkham Asylum crossover arc that drew me into him. Because, you know, that was the early days of Vertigo when they thought they were still trying to bridge gaps, which has now completely collapsed. Which is okay, I guess. But, here's my one hang-up with this novel. It's wonderful. It was a comic book first. It was a serialized medium. You can still see it in this. The B stories from the things that would be B stories are cut in as interludes. Those get a little repetitive. I think the story comes across a little jumbled. And you can tell that some of it was, this is going to be a 4-part arc that we're going to move on from when he was scripting it as a comic. And then when he turned it into a novel, he had to cut the last bit off and put it at the end because that's how you structure novels. And it doesn't totally... And Gaiman's awesome, and he makes it work for the most part. But there's these just niggling little structural bits that still get me, even on a reread. They don't bug me much, but they bug me.
I didn't know it was a comic at first.
He started scripting it and planning out an arc for Vertigo, and Vertigo was like, nope. So he turned it into a novel.
Which is so strange considering how far and wide Vertigo has gone, or had gone from the at that point. And you get stuff like, you know, Fables and stuff like Why the Last Man, and then later on, I believe American Vampire was on there at some point. It was American. Like, you get a lot of really weird shit going in there, so this doesn't feel like this could easily work under the Vertigo line, so I don't know how why that wouldn't necessarily be.
I think it was the religion angle. I think that might have been part of it. At the time, at least, the editors were sensitive to it. You know, more recently they released Preacher, so I guess that's not an issue for them anymore.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm like, Preacher was really... I mean, if you want to talk about like the religious angle, I mean, Preacher had that bent over and was paddling it for its entire run.
Oh, yes. So, getting into the plot. We have... young man named Shadow Moon. I did not realize he had a last name.
Neither did I.
I'm actually looking at sort of like the back cover or a back cover summary on HarperCollins, and I'm like, wait, he has a last name? When did that come up? But he's in prison for a horrible beating and robbery that he did commit, and he gets released a few days early because his wife has died. And now having nothing to tie him to home, very conveniently, he gets a job offer from an old one-eyed man named Wednesday. He becomes his assistant, just his errand boy on this job Wednesday's putting together, which takes him to meet increasingly strange characters. To say the least. He comes to realize that Wednesday is Odin, and he's putting together all of the old pagan gods for one last go at trying to take out the new deities of America for a chance at a little more vitality. Things go bad from there, and it... I'm going to spoil it now, because I always spoil it now. It was a con. It was a long con, as befits Odin in certain ways. And he was playing every side against the middle to get a whole bunch of dead gods' bloods sacrificed to him. And his bro Loki.
Yeah, he used a self-sacrifice to be able to become incredibly powerful, and old Loki's going to feed off of all that
all chaos that and
negative
mistrust.
Energy. Yeah,
and Shadow is caught in the middle, trying to figure out who he is as this is going down.
And just really in general, just the like not just his own. You know, his own place, but the play, like, I really get the feeling that this is an interesting kind of take of how different religions and different deities can come and go in society. You know, just, you know, Odin is, could be just as, you know, relevant or irrelevant as Thoth or Anubis or, oh God, or Chernabog or even the internet at some point. I mean, how many, you know, think about like the concept, take a concept like the pager, right? You have a lot of these personifications going on that are supposed to be representations of things that we have nowadays. And if you go back to the 80s or the 90s, like, you would imagine somebody worships the pager because that's supposed to be like the big status symbol. But nowadays, that you know, quote unquote god would be just as useless and weak as, you know, any of the other Eastern European gods or Egyptian gods that are, you know, tooling around in the States.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big sort of metaphysical thing it introduces, and it if anyone's taken a good mythology class or classical studies course, there is an old idea that, you know, gods need prayer to keep going. Like, that's what humans are around for, and that plays into this in a big way. I think television points out that, you know, my box is my altar, and the only thing anyone seems to sacrifice is time. And so if the old rituals keep kicking around, the gods can keep on limping, but without real belief, they just go away.
I will say that I hadn't got to the point yet where I understood who the new gods were. I was still a little confused by them up to almost midpoint of the book. I didn't know what they represented.
Well, yet. he doesn't like sit down and say, well, it's not like Odin sits down and explains anything. He just like, we're gonna meet Zerbonog and his relatives. They all share one crappy apartment. And it's like, they don't tell you the Zoryas are the Fates. They just say, hey, those are the Zoryas sisters. They're going to say creepy and prophetic things.
Yeah, a lot of it isn't necessarily told. It's sort of, that's why I really got a lot. I got more out of this book when I read it the second time because I did a little more research on these specific gods and their different representations in the text. And then, you know, the way that he introduces them, you know, feels more organic than just straight introduction. Like, obviously introducing Mr. Nancy, you know, oh, that's Anansi, you know, and then obviously later on, you know, Gaiman does a book featuring Anansi, but like you get a better understanding, at least in me, a better appreciation for the way how he introduces them and how they factor into what Shadow is doing. Particularly the ones that I like the most were Mr. Ibis and Mr. Jackal.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, which I that one I got right away because I was a little more familiar with some of with Egyptian myth. So, you know, with the and specifically how they're running a funeral parlor, I'm like, ah, that's I like what you do there. I like that.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah, I see what you did there, Neil, and I likes it.
And again, I'm sure somewhere down the line, maybe at year 20, there will be a full annotated edition that just kind of spells it out. That's going to be a little disappointing. Because there's a few, like, I'm proud of myself for catching, and there's somewhere it's like, okay, I'm not sure there's like 800 Chinese guys these characters could be. I just know they've got a golf bag full of swords right now.
You know, and I really think that I think that this would be a good book to kind of introduce to I think that this would be good for high schoolers, but definitely college level, sort of a way to kind of, you know, a friendly way to introduce people into some aspects of myth, because it's definitely not easy for a lot of people to kind of get into this, and I think this is kind of a good way, and especially with the way that Neil writes, is, you know, it isn't complicated. It's just, you know, it has its flow. I think people could definitely get an appreciation for it. And I specifically, you know, Shadow's story is relatable enough where you know, just about your average high schooler should be able to appreciate it. Should. I don't know. It depends if people who may be teachers might be able to tell me otherwise.
Plus, if you're in high s plus you can keep the high schoolers interested, because there's about every seven chapters there's some interesting sex going on.
Yeah. That's there's nothing like a little bit of nookie to keep you going, you know? No, I mean
Lena,
you get weird stuff. What?
you're allowed to slap me if the section quote for this episode is "Hey, want to see Lucy's tits?"
I'm okay with that.
Because right now it's a draw between that and the really long one.
I'm gonna vote for Lucy's tits. I like that better. Although, as long as you don't have to put the little asterisk in for the I.
I don't. We're the internet. We're allowing ourselves at least three of those seven words.
Okay, that works. Because I know I can't put douche or fuck, but that's okay. I think tits would be okay. It is a bird, isn't it?
I spaced out for half a second. Your guys are talking about douches and fucking, and I'm just like, whoa, what's going on? What's
No
happening?
book. We switched
Where's
books on you.
the fucking I can understand, but I don't remember any douching in this book.
No, there was no douching.
Okay. I would have said maybe that might have been like in the 10th anniversary edition, and I haven't read that one yet, so maybe that might have been like a maybe that's why Vertigo
Maybe
passed that.
that
Maybe
yeah, that's
there was
the
a douching
50
scene.
missing pages. Epic descriptions of douching. The most poetic douching ever committed to literature.
Was it douching with Sheba? That's an entire chapter. I mean, the guy gets consumed, so
Yeah,
really.
that was cool. I loved that. That chapter and the Ifrit,
Yeah.
the cab driver.
That was pretty neat.
Yes.
Especially the way that that ends. I liked, and that's what I also liked about it is that he manages to throw in like these short stories, you know, that definitely matter in the course of, you know, especially humanity's interaction with the old world. But, you know, I think it breaks up the pace in an interesting way.
It does and it doesn't. Like, I think there are some really standout stories, but I think towards the latter half, more so, the story is always, hey, these people showed up in America, they brought their gods with them, and the gods fell to obscurity, the end.
Right, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Like, there's definitely the long section with the Irish woman who got transported twice.
Yeah.
And like that's a good Like, that one works, but there's, like, two more just like it, and then the last one before the end is the story of the mammoth people getting all hopped up on cypress fumes or whatever that was.
Yeah.
Like that story works because of the way it ends, but it's like there's three more just like it.
I did like the leprechaun. I forgot about that one. I did like the lady who brings the leprechauns with her. And I like how the gods get to America. I like how they kind of put that out there.
Yeah, well, I see what you mean that they did repeat that game and repeated the two stories. I liked all the stories, but I could have done with a little more, it could have been even been in the past, but just normal folk dealing with old gods that are still kicking around somehow, whether it's
causing mayhem or
a literal man eater, yeah, or. Or like the Ifrit, like that was really neat because it was, you know, you definitely get a cross culture thing going. You have the guy from was he from Oman or where was he from? I don't remember where he was.
He was, I think.
Well, yeah, the guy who interacts with the Ifrit, like there. You know, you definitely get, you know, this guy who's coming into the country and, you know, he's scared because he has no idea what he's doing here and he's not happy with his life. And then you get his interaction with the Ifrit, who is miserable because, you know, he used to be all powerful and, you know, be a god. And now he's stuck driving a cab. So
I actually had to read the ending of that section twice because I was like, did I read that right? Did I confuse myself?
Right. Remember, they don't grant wishes. Like,
yes. Very good.
But I get, now that you've touched on it, this is kind of a theme of it, and I think a theme I sort of have noted in my many post-it notes sticking out of my novel, but is Guymon's from England, and this is a story about immigration and the cultural clash in immigrant families. Do you think an American author could have written this?
An American? Probably not. Or not have the same not have the same sort of perspective from it. Because, you know, he grew up in England and, you know, is a fairly recent, I mean, in the last 15, 20 years, you know, depending on how old he is, that's, you know, it's a chunk of his life. But he didn't really grow up here. So I think he might have a different appreciation or a different angle on it than, you know, somebody like me or something. Even though I come from, you know, my mother's side, maybe three generations here in the States. Before that, they were in Ireland, whereas my father's generation, where he was born in another country and he came here when he was really young. So even then, I'm still one generation removed. He still has that fresh mentality of coming over.
Right. No, I agree. And I think, and when I was, since I didn't finish the book, I needed to know the story itself. And I wish I could remember who it was, but I'm kind of fine with not knowing it. One of the reviews of it was basically a big complaint because he is British writing about gods in America.
Well, he's writing about gods from not America.
Right.
With the exception of Wizakajek, who I think might still be my favorite character from this. It's like, yeah, when all you white folks get tired, you can leave the breweries.
Well, I mean, you could argue that the new gods are the American gods.
Yeah.
Mm.
But Elvis isn't in it, so I don't know how much that counts.
Now, that would have been interesting.
Well, no, Guymon even, I've read interviews with him, and he kind of regrets not finding a place for Elvis in it, which is why he gets a feature chapter in Good Omens.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, he does make vague references to Jesus.
Well, no one likes that guy.
Exactly.
Stealing our holidays. Took our gerbs.
Oh my god, I cannot wait to finish this book.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's that finale is pretty wild. When you get to the section where he's being sacrificed, or he's sacrificing his own damn self, then, you know, get ready to put on the doors, get ready for the trippy shit, you know, it's nice and mind-opening.
And the other thing that I didn't get, because, you know, I don't know if it's just, I don't look too deep into things, and that is both a good thing and a bad thing, because I can enjoy something fresh, but I also didn't make the connection of the magic coin and Lara coming out of her grave. I didn't make the connection that that's why she was alive. Well,
oh yeah,
alive-ish. Yeah,
undead.
Well, I couldn't think of the word.
Part of it is I think you're maybe one good chunk away from having just that sort of explained that you get the leprechaun shows up. It's like, I need that coin, dude. I gave it away. Well, fuck.
Yeah. But the thing was, I also kind of forgot that he tossed it into the grave, which is probably why I didn't put two and two together. Because since he was, you know, he did coin tricks in jail, it was almost a little throwaway action to me.
Well, there's a lot of things that start in jail that are almost throwaways.
That come back later?
That come back later. Nothing low-key about that.
Oh, stop it.
Hey, if it gets cut the first time, I get to do it again.
No, it's just low-key comment. It's just that whole thing I found particularly interesting. Like, I cannot overemphasize how big this book was for me. His relationship with his wife, and how she, like, just the heartbreaking nature behind it. Like, he comes out, it's like, this woman was the only thing that he had.
Well, it was the only thing he was looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, he had a job lined up, but you get the impression he just did the job because it was money.
Well, it was also money and a way to try to not fall back into a life that would put him back in jail.
Just kind of rebuild and kind of start over again with his wife, who called him puppy.
Yeah, it was like, oh, they had such an adorable relationship. Oh, she was blowing some guy when she died. That's awful. It's like, oh.
That's awful.
Yeah,
that happens.
It's like, I lost my wife and my best friend two different ways in one day. Welcome home, Shadow.
And what's worse is, like, the other chick, like, when the other chick kind of tells her, like, oh, yeah, she was sucking this guy's cock, and then spits on her face. It's like,
oh. It was her husband, his wife.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, that sucks. I mean, you can't really get too pissed off at her because, yeah, he was kind of getting blown by some other chick. But at the same point, you know, it's like, hey, that's my girl, and she dead, but she was blowing some guy. So, yeah, initiate circles of self-hatred.
I do like how that little bit comes back. And maybe, here's a question. You think Odin maybe put that truck on the road? Maybe, just a little, on that day?
I wouldn't put it past him. That seems like something very Odin-ish.
Well, Odin is a dick.
Well, yeah, at least the American version of Odin is quite an asshole.
Well, I don't blame him.
He is kind of bitter. He has some reason to be annoyed. I mean, you don't be all powerful and shit and then lose that, and you kind of take it with some grace, especially if you're Odin. No, if you're Odin, you do what you can to get yours, you know.
Like, I was with him in his bitterness, and it's like, yeah, he stiffed a girl on a tick. Don't do that. Your life might suck.
Didn't he stiff her on the tip and then gave her some stiff that night?
Yeah.
So not only did he not pay her, he boned her and then probably left her with the check for the hotel or motel room. Like, that's just a classic grifter.
Oh, Odin.
I am disappointed, Odin.
Well, I think that, and again, I think Gaiman's doing a good job of bringing, you know, these figures to light in sort of a very real way. Because Odin tends to get cleaned up in like post-contact accounts of Norse mythology, because Norse mythology got really heavily Christianized, mostly because a lot of it was already there, but some of it was just like, nope, we're gonna make Loki Satan just entirely.
Jeez. Yeah, obviously the whole sacrifice on the world tree and the lance on the side, or spear on the side rather, you know, kind of co-opted into Christianity, but. At least it was co-opted into Christianity. Wait, that's the thing, is my timing for it doesn't quite match for that.
A bunch of monks noticed a really interesting similarity between a couple of them. Like, some early Joseph Campbells were like, hey now.
I mean, there's definitely the monotheism. There's a lot of similarities in certain parts of the various testaments and stuff. But then, you know, you go into other bits of mythology and then you kind of find other similarities, like obviously Odin, you know, strung on the tree, he stabbed, etc., etc. And other various across different mythologies and different belief systems. So, you know, that's why I think that this would be a good book for, you know, kids, like, you know, high school kids, because it kind of, and this is of course just coming from my own mind, but it kind of shows that, hey, guess what, you know, other religions and other thoughts have existed before, and, you know, it's entirely possible that some ideas might have been co-opted, and just keep other things in mind, and just, well, you know, not be go down a corridor of thought.
Well, especially that Easter chapter maybe hits it again, where you've got Easter is like, you know what, I'm fine, people love my holiday, I got bunnies and eggs all over the place.
Yeah.
And then they pull over the pagan, the happy pagan girl, and it's like,
yeah.
So yeah, people freaking worship you all the time.
And of course, you have to imagine somebody like Santa would obviously be another, you know, and obviously the U.S. version of Santa would be the one that would be very powerful in the States.
Well, the Coca-Cola Santa, particularly.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's what I mean. Yeah,
because strictly speaking, Santa's in this.
Yeah. I'm specifically mentioning Coca-Cola Santa because, you know the guy that this was taken from obviously has been changed over time to kind of better fit audiences and companies over here. It's another example of how, you know, our gods are both radically different and not different whatsoever from these old gods that are just trying to get their place back. It's just something how I see how the old just refuses to give way to the new.
Yeah.
And the old does not want to give up.
Yeah. I swear I'm going to have to read this book like 4 times.
That's maybe not
probably not a bad thing.
It's not a bad idea.
Nah.
I think it's something you can come back around to every couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I give it a read every 2 or 3 years cuz I get that hankering. It's sort of like, I haven't read American Gods in a while. I think it's time for me to pick it up. I picked it up. I started dating my current girlfriend. She hadn't read it. Oh, what a coinky dink. I haven't read it either. Here's your copy, and I'm going to read it too. So I got my recent read in about 2 years ago. So
yeah. So something else is, I think, and this will play into something, and this is all building, but Gaiman does an amazing job of building sort of that old, like that pre-interstate road trip feel to this novel. Like mm-hmm. there is nothing but small towns and mm-hmm. diners and those second string buffet chain restaurants and tourist traps all over this novel.
And kinda I have to like Americana.
Like that, mm-hmm. that very, like it is definitely Americana. Without being super nostalgic about it, because I think Lakeside kind of pulls that rug out. But it, but he clearly sat down and kind of got a feel for small town America, and brought that to the page.
Yeah,
and you know, I didn't even think about that in relationship to the fact that he's not American. I didn't, which is a good thing. It means he did a damn good job.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about it in those terms.
Yeah, he's definitely good at being able to encapsulate an entire feeling of something and be able to put it onto the page.
Like that, like they go to places. Like I've been to the House on the Rock, and based on what I've and the chapter at the House on the Rock, he's been there too.
Mm-hmm.
You can't not. But that is exactly what that place feels like. Have either of you gone?
No,
but it actually sounds a little spooky to me.
It's weird and creepy and old and
like,
stuff.
Yeah, like borderline creepy.
It's a little bit creepy and a little bit whimsical.
Uh-huh.
Like it's something, if you ever find yourself in Wisconsin, I don't know why you'd find yourself in Wisconsin, but I'm sorry, Wisconsin, there goes our listenership. There.
They're all in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They're all in Wisconsin.
Blame Neil Gaiman. Do not blame you.
Don't blame me. I'm sorry, but
Neil made it creepy.
If you go, like, if you ever find yourself close, take the day and go to see it, because it is the weirdest place.
Okay.
Like, it is a deliberate, like, it, like, there's a certain layer of deliberate weirdness where you walk into a room and all the walls have been done in, like, mosaic, and it's full floor-to-ceiling with paperweights. And then you just go into the next room, it's like, this is weird entirely unintentionally. This was something that was designed to make perfect sense, and it's just like, no, this is weirder than the last room.
You're like, how is this possible? And especially, yeah, because the way he does it feels very much like, I've never read it, but I've heard of enough people who have read it to kind of comment on it, like, something wicked this way comes.
That there is a certain amount of that.
Yeah, kind of like that weird, that haunting, you walk into a place and there's nobody else there and everything is supposed to look kind of all right, but everything is also kind of fucked up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah. Your hackles kind of raise when he describes some of the rooms. Yeah, you can kind of see somebody possibly getting snatched or getting shanked in any of those places.
Going in and never coming out again.
Well, yeah. Especially the Infinity Room.
Yeah.
That is a room designed to make you feel like you would never leave it.
and do you want to leave it the second you walk in?
Well, it's like, I have a fear of heights, so this is 100, so it's like 200 feet off the ground because of the rock.
Yeah.
And because in order to get the trompe-l'oeil effect, the windows have to angle downward. So you take more than 12 steps in, you can now start looking down through
no,
the windows on the
no.
side.
Ooh,
so that's... it's just like, okay, like, I have danced a jig on the glass floors of the CN Tower, but this is eerier.
You're like, nope, I'm leaving. Fuck this.
Nope, I have danced a merry jig atop a see-through floor on the tallest freestanding structure on the planet at the time, but no, this is too weird for me.
When I went to the Grand Canyon, and parts of it have no fences, like, you know, no fencing. Parts of it have no fencing.
Yeah.
And I was actually with a tour group, and, you know, everyone's just getting right to the edge and looking down. I had to make everyone move away from me, move far away from me. I had to belly crawl to the edge in order to look down.
Ooh.
Did you throw a penny?
No.
They don't like it when you do it, but you should.
I imagine mounds and mounds of pennies littering the ground.
Pennies and paper airplanes. Nothing. Nothing but that on the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
I was just much too concerned about someone standing near me and a gust of wind throwing me over the edge.
You know they want to make a glass bridge across a section of it.
I've heard that, and I don't like that at all. And not because of my fear of falling to my death. I don't want them to ruin it.
If they could find a way to do it without damaging without damaging the look of everything, then yeah, I'd say do it. That sounds really neat. As long as they make it strong enough so that, you know, a couple people could be walking over there and then suddenly, oh no!
It'll be one of those, it'll be the same ridiculous, you know, super plastics they use on the seafloors and other high places.
It'll be a Gorilla Glass, you know, the stuff on the back of the iPhones. iPhones don't crack anymore. It's all right. It'll be all right.
It'll be okay.
Yeah, you guys will be fine.
What do they encase the Pope-mobile in? How about that stuff?
It's Gorilla Glass.
And you notice that they only go to, like, the really fake man-made tourist traps.
Yes. Yes.
Like, even, like, the geographic center of America is not the actual geographic center of America. It's like 12 miles north, and they just put a sign there saying it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's mankind creating the centers of power.
Now, since I haven't finished the book, do they go to the Corn Palace?
They don't go to the Corn Palace, I'm sorry.
Damn it! I've been there.
What's the Corn Palace?
That's North Dakota, right?
South Dakota. Mitchell, South Dakota. It is it's a palace of sorts. It is completely decorated in corn, and every year they change the theme.
And they also have a very large corn maze.
I didn't get to go to the maze.
Well, the maze is only active for like 2 months.
Oh, okay. When I was there,
basically during corn season.
If there was ever anything that made you think that we just have way too much fucking corn in this country, I think that might be the
the fact that they have the world's largest corn.
Yeah, I think it's called the Corn Palace. I think you might have an overabundance of corn. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm just saying maybe actually biodiesel would be terrible for humanity.
Probably would not be that good.
No. When I went to Minneapolis for the second and final Mystery Science Theater 3000 convention, we met a friend who lives in Nebraska, and we just kind of drove and met in Mitchell at the Corn Palace. And had we known that we were close enough, we would have probably gone to the Badlands and Mount Rushmore. But we didn't realize. I mean, this was a number of years ago. So we didn't realize like how long it would take us to get places. And
well, also, half the highways through there are like on ridiculously low speed limits.
Mm. Yeah,
because they want you to enjoy the park.
And to be able to get all those tourists who love the speed and be able just to get a couple bucks out of them.
Yeah. But if you can go to Rushmore, go during Sturgis Bike Week. It's hella entertaining to watch.
I bet it is.
Actually, mentioned my girlfriend earlier. She actually did a partial cross-country journey recently this past year. And not quite as tourist trappy. Actually, not tourist trappy at all. Definitely more of the nature variety. But that was one of the I couldn't go because I was stuck, you know, finishing my education. And yeah, I really that's definitely something I would have loved. That would have been neat to kind of have that kind of experience. And any book or any movie or anything that's able to kind of nail that, like we're just looking at shit. Just we're just gonna drive off in that direction. We're just gonna keep going. We'll find something.
Do that. I would absolutely love to do that.
I did that in Japan, and it was really, really cool.
Wow.
Just going off and, like, again, Japan is really really friendly for foreigners, especially people who speak English. Like, if you have any problems, you're not going to have any problems. Like, if you're in, I mean, maybe if, like, you're in some of the smaller suburbs, but mm-hmm. most of, like, the larger cities. Like, if you're in Tokyo, forget about it. You're not going to have any problem getting around. Like, they have booths. They have booths for people to speak English, like if you get lost on the train, and the train system is good enough where you can just have adventures like mm-hmm. Like that.
And while you're at the train station, they'll just sell you tickets to the Ghibli Museum because hey, you're white and in Japan, so you must love Ghibli.
Well, what's funny about that is like I had to go ahead and I had to order my tickets ahead of time through the travel agent. Now, I didn't go through a travel agent, but I needed a travel agent to be able to actually. To be able to buy these tickets, and they fucked up my ticket. They gave it to me for the day before, like two or like I'm dyslexic and I have a lot of problems with sixes and nines, so mm-hmm. I specifically wrote a six, or rather I specifically wrote a nine, and they gave me a six, but because of my lame ass and I was so excited, I completely missed it. So we got there and our tickets weren't valid, but they were so nice that I just bought new tickets for that day. And you know, and because the thing is like they do a cutoff. Like if after a certain point, no more tickets.
Right.
And we had already passed that point, and they still let me buy tickets for everybody. So, you know, people are very friendly over there, and they're very willing to work with you. Also helps that I'm a rather large, imposing Spaniard looking dude with long hair. So they probably were like, "Oh, just let him in. He's giving us money."
It's like, look, he's vaguely Portuguese looking. He's got a bunch of money. Let him in. It always works out for us.
He's just. That would have been even better if I walked in. Like, let me in. I just threw the money in their face. I did not do it that way, but I kind of wish I did. Would have been awesome.
Next time.
Next time.
But back to Lakeside.
Yes, I'm sorry.
The creeping darkness of rural America.
And that is where I am in the book. It's his first, it's Shadow's first full day in Lakeside.
Well, remember Hinzelmann with his cute old man stories about being old and how it's cold out all the time.
Back in my day, we didn't have to worry about this.
Like, I think everyone who lives in a small town knows an old guy like Hinzelmann. You've probably got an uncle who is exactly him. And like, he comes out and he's just super charming.
Like, it feels very Twin Peaksy.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I know that Twin Peaks is supposed to be set like on a seaside in on the West Coast, right?
Like it's Washington.
Yeah, it's like Washington. So definitely, like, this isn't the right area, but just that kind of weird, that just that very off feeling. Like, something is really weird in this town.
Like, as you get to later days, the whole town feels slightly off. Like, like, there's a girl who's missing, and they go looking for her for a day. And then they just brush it off. And it's just like, yeah, just a winter runaway. They happen all the time. Like, they happen and everyone accepts it. And you're like, no. You as the reader are like, no, girl, go.
And especially, it was like once a year, right?
Yeah, it's annual.
Yeah, so somebody goes missing once a year. There's nothing wrong with that.
Population of 9,000, if that, right?
We're just missing one punk kid.
Oh, just one more punk kid, whatever.
So, yeah, it's a little, you walk in, it's like, I think I'm going to leave this town. I don't like it here. I'm getting out of here.
It's a little weird.
And when somebody likes Shadow, because the way that Gaiman makes Shadow sound is, you don't want to fuck with this guy. Shadow's a pretty mean motherfucker. It's like, well, I mean, he's rather calm and controlled, but don't piss him off.
He's not a bear you poke.
No.
Yeah. I like him.
He's really he's a really sympathetic character. Like, you really feel for him. And I like that he's flawed, because obviously, you know, he's in jail for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know,
but even then, he's like, yep, I'm here for a reason. I'm going to be a better guy.
Yeah, I'm doing my time.
We've all felt that.
Yep.
Like, we've all felt, I've screwed up, but I'm going to do better.
I'm not going to make the same mistakes again. And then, obviously, he gets out and his entire life is thrown for a loop. And, you know, he definitely, you can't really even blame him for getting caught up in all of Wednesday's bullshit, considering how much of a manipulator he is, you know, at some point. And especially, you know, if we're talking like, I wonder who sent that truck going down that opposite direction. You know, you think about how everything could have been executed in a certain way.
Just putting the pieces in place.
Yeah. And the way that those two guys worked it, I would completely believe it.
Yep.
Damn.
So, I mean, I love this book so much, man.
I do like it a lot.
Special place in my heart.
All right. So,
I think I'm quite sure that when I do finish it, I will love it, because I'm totally, totally enthralled by it at this point.
All right, so I cannot decide who I like more, Zernobog or them.
I like Chernobog.
He's so straightforward. It's like, yep, I used to kill things all the time. When this is done,
I'm gonna kill you.
You know, when this is done, I'll take you out. Do it right.
God-wise, who is he? Because I don't know who he is.
He's Zernobog.
Oh, I gotta look him up. That's the other thing I have to do.
He's a Slavic winter darkness guy.
Okay.
Yeah, and
he's harder to pin down compared to some of the easier gods. Like, you can't pin him down quite as firmly as the Greek guys.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Who are not?
Yeah, I like Shunup. Yeah, but just Ibis and Jackal. I like that. I like them a lot. Like, they still take the cake. Just specifically, just the way that they, their setup is just fantastic.
Like, you know, no one used to call us black until after the Civil War. What's with that?
Yeah, I liked that. That was.
Oh man, and I'm gonna have to reread this book. God damn it, I don't have time, but I have to do it. Do another reread.
I need to buy it in paper form, because I think I'll enjoy it more in paper.
Well, it feels weighty. Like,
yeah.
It's not like, it's only 500 pages, but it feels like it's got a little more heft to it.
I'm sure it does.
And I gotta love Ibis and Jaquel when all the shit goes down, and there's Shadow dead on the tree, and it's like, no, I'm supposed to get St. Peter and all that. I don't believe in you guys. Too bad, we believe in you. Here's the feather.
Yeah, just... And the, well, I feel like I kind of don't want to talk about it, because I still want that to be kind of, I mean, even as you read, the way how Loki is dispatched is also very, very interesting, considering how, I don't think any of the synopsises that I've seen have mentioned how.
No.
Okay, yeah, so when you get to how he's taken care of, there's a great amount of justice, but it's also interesting how it kind of takes everything that's been set up on how all the gods work, and it kind of spins it on its head like one last time.
Mm.
Like, Scott, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Just some poking going on. Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some sharp poking.
Sharp poke.
Oh my goodness. Right. What else do we have?
What else do we have? Okay, so we have the crazy bit at the end.
What about that Indian Native American that he keeps seeing in his dream?
Oh, Buffalo Man?
But yes, thank you.
He is the land itself.
In the same.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. I could see that because like I did. Yeah.
That's kind of all there is to him. It's like this is the very primordial America telling him just keep going. Like he knows the shape of things, the shape of things to come, and no shadow can do it. Because this is sort of deeper magic at play.
Yeah, and then specifically kind of that also features into kind of that's actually a legitimate American god that has lost its power because of the decimation of its people. So that has a different, you know, that's another interesting kind of perspective there, because all these other gods are foreign based, but now you have something that's legitimately North American.
Well, even something like you've got Daniel Boone in here, who is, you know, he's a culture hero.
Yeah. And you Johnny know, Appleseed too.
Like Daniel Boone and Johnny Appleseed are kicking around just being like folk heroes getting by on what, middle school, not even like grade school reading assignments. And they're both sitting there going like, fucking Paul Bunyan, hate that guy. Goddamn ad exec, 100 years ago, ruined it for us.
I would love to see an updated version of this set. Maybe like 30 or 40 years. Well, it would have to be a little bit longer. It would have to be when all of these big celebrities nowadays that we worship, or all of these rock stars are dead. And how some people were like, or you just use Jimi Hendrix, like you were talking about Elvis, you know, different actual characters, you know, coming back.
There's a wonderful short story by Yahtzee Croshaw, actually. And it's like maybe, I don't think it's more than 4 pages, but it's about a superhero audition. Like a guy's trying out for the Justice League, and he has the power of rock.
Like the power of metal!
Yeah, like he was not Earth elementalism. He was struck by lightning at a rock show, and the spirit of rock and roll chose him to carry his power.
Oh gosh,
that story sounds so awesome.
Well, like the conversations he had, like he's describing how it looked, and it's like, yes, it did look like Elvis' amazing spherical woman, until I turned around, and then he looked like John Lennon, and then he looked like the Big Bopper, you know.
I had this idea and it just completely went out of my head. I just want to imagine that when you have the power of rock, you start talking like Thor. Like you just go into these and thous and you look like a Viking. I just want Led Zeppelin to be the way.
No, you're Val Hollen from the Justice Friends.
Yes. Oh, that'd be so awesome.
Have you guys heard about the whole HBO thing?
That was the other thing I wanted to bring up.
Oh, okay.
Which is, apparently Tom Hanks is producing, which I don't know what that means for him actually playing a role in it.
Oh, for the love of God. Please, Tom Hanks may be a fine actor, but don't put him in none of these characters match.
Like, I can't see him playing anyone, though.
No, not at all.
And there's part of me that's
maybe he could be Loki, I think.
I think he'd play it. See, no, because that's too much of a red flag.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right.
Like,
yeah.
If you put someone that famous in a role that's only in the pilot and just, like, he's in the pilot and then disappears for, you know, 7 episodes, you're gonna clue in.
He'll be back. Unless you find a way to deal with him immediately.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be, I believe, 6 seasons.
Yes, but only the first two will be the book.
Right.
And then the next two will be a sequel he's writing right now.
Well, mm-hmm. there is a no sequel novella.
Yeah, like there are novellas and short stories they can draw into.
Right.
Yeah. And I would not say no to seeing Anansi Boys televised.
Yeah, and Anansi Boys is, I mean, it's not directly an American Gods, but it does like, handle some like, similar things.
Like Mr. Nancy, he has his own drama.
Yeah, he has his chillins that he's been spreading around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you could. I definitely would like to see a season of that. That would be pretty nice. And I mean, specifically if Gaiman stays involved with the whole thing, just considering how much I enjoyed his Doctor Who episodes. Like, he can keep writing for TV, and I'll just be happily watching. I'll be like a little kid sitting in front of a television on Saturday
morning.
Well,
I mean, he's proven himself as a TV writer. I think HBO has proven themselves to be very good at this sort of material.
Yeah.
So I think we could be up for something fun.
It's just, I don't see them working on American Gods until they either finish or they catch up with Game of Thrones.
I think it's going to be a situation where they catch up.
Oh, no, for sure. How slow Martin writes, then they'll probably catch up with the latest book. Oh, he might get maybe one more book out.
Fortunately, it's going to take 3 or 4 seasons per novel after this one. So.
Yeah, there's a lot from what Chris was telling me. It'll be a while. So
you get some serious perspective bloat.
Yeah. Oh no, I know. Oh, no, specifically with the way that Chris is telling me how this season will end. I have a feeling that Game of Thrones isn't going anywhere. But you know, as long as they, I don't care how long they take, as long as they do it well. And HBO has proven themselves capable of crafting. It doesn't necessarily have to exactly be the same as the book, but they do a good job of it regardless. I've really liked the stuff with True Blood, and my girlfriend is a big fan of the book series, and it is radically different, but it's still enjoyable.
It's still fun. But it's okay, so fun. Who would you pick to play? Who fantasy casting? Who would you pick?
Oh shit! Okay, because
it's tough for me to say anyone but Hiddleston for Loki right now. I mean, he's kind of like he owns the role, man. Right now.
The thing is, the Loki that I imagine here is older and more haggard, so I would like to see Paul Giamatti. Oh. I imagine an old, broken, like, broken-looking guy.
Like, someone beat, like, that, for all the old gods, I'd want someone older, more broke, beaten-up actors.
That would be so damn cool.
Yeah, especially all of the old gods that are mentioned throughout that whole story, definitely, like, I want to see, and again, maybe it might be stereotypical, but I want to see Morgan Freeman as a Nazi. That would be so great.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's like, it's an easy choice, but it's easy for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, he's just got that old crafty smile.
Yeah.
I believe like Morgan Freeman stole Tiger's balls. I believe it. Then tricked Tiger into eating monkey over the whole thing.
The problem is I can't pin Shadow, because for me...
Shadow's a bit of a cipher.
Yes, see, that's the thing, is I never... All of the playthroughs, sorry, mixing my genres here. All of the read-throughs I've done, I've never been able to, like, nail down what Shadow looks like, besides that he's big. And I just get the hint that he's kind of brown. I don't know why. I don't think he's...
I thought he was blonde.
Like, well, was here's the thing. His mother was a translator in Europe for the UN.
Yeah.
So that kind of trips me as white, especially for, like, the 70s or 80s when that would have... Mm-hmm. When she would have been over there.
Right.
His dad is Odin.
Yeah.
So there's part of me that says, yes, he should be white. But then there's the comment from Miss Blackfoot that's like, you sure you're not part Kree?
Yeah. That was one of the things that made me think that he might be kind of brown. Like, not necessarily like Hispanic or you know, mixed African American, or maybe even, you know, he might be American Indian too. I mean, there is a lot of that. But I think it really works for the story to have him be a cipher, but it definitely makes casting very difficult.
Yeah, like if anything, I would almost play up the native angle a little bit, just go all out with it and get what's his name who's on Longmire right now? I'm looking it up, but the guy who's playing Deputy, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Oh,
ooh. Oh, he's a little bit too old, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a touch too old, probably.
Yeah, because I get the impression that Shadow is still pretty young. Like, now, he's in his early 30s.
He's 32, the same age as Jesus.
Yeah, so Lou Diamond Phillips, when he was younger, would have definitely been a good
Lou Diamond Phillips might be 10 years too old.
I would have enjoyed that.
In my attempt to get Idris Elba and everything, I will accept Idris Elba as a Nazi.
Well, yeah, because Idris Elba has... He's just good at everything.
I want him at everything. He's just such a badass.
I'd actually, you know what? Idris Elba as Mr. World.
Yes. You know what? I'll accept him as Odin. Because why not?
Because why not?
Because I'll believe it. I'll believe it. Anything he tells me.
Idris Elba needs to be in everything.
Yeah. And also, I am having the problem of casting Wednesday or Odin as anything not Anthony Hopkins, because he grabbed Odin and he's just like, I'm Odin. Like a lot of that stuff is stuck in my head. But I just like you want somebody who's older, but you know, but like a bit, like I imagine him like a big strapping dude, which just kind of fits with kind of having Paul Giamatti as kind of being, you know, kind of the scrappier, worse for wear looking Loki.
Yeah, like Anthony Hopkins is mostly retired though. He only like that like TV's probably too much work for him.
You know who I could imagine being a good Odin? What's this guy's Wolverine?
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, if you age him up a little bit, because he's got all that charm and he can manipulate, like he definitely looks like somebody who would be able to play a good manipulator.
I could accept this, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, if you wanted to go full Caucasian, you know, Hugh Jackman as Shadow wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea either.
But that's one where we're back into maybe just a bit too old territory.
Yeah, that's true. He's getting a little not in a bad way, but he can't play early 30s anymore.
Yeah.
Just don't make it Channing Tatum. That's all I ask of you people.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, Channing Tatum actually, he's actually not an awful actor, but
no,
it would not
no,
work.
He is an awful actor. I saw Magic Mike. He wrote that character based on himself and didn't pull it off.
Well, I believed him. He just wanted to make furniture. That's all he wanted to do. He was just on the beach. Magic Mike is Shadow. There you go.
No.
Don't do it. Fuck.
It's fine.
For the love of God, shut the fuck up. It could happen.
I'm only 4 hours away from you. I can find you.
You're ruining my dreams. I also
that
get
said,
weird...
I can say one name for certain.
Who?
Christina Hendricks is Easter.
Mm-hmm. Amen, sir.
I haven't got to her yet in the book, but
Easter's a fertility goddess, and when you think fertility goddess,
yeah.
I think
there is one figure.
Literally.
She may have stolen my hat, but she stole my heart with it.
She can have all of the bunnies, all of the chocolate bunnies and the peeps. I will give them all to her.
You can have all of my peeps. And my hat.
The one thing though is that, like, I kind of always imagine, I imagine Zooey Deschanel for the impression that I got, because the way that I envisioned the way that he wrote Easter was more of this kind of like kind of a hippie chick, yeah, it's kind of floating around, more like that. But I mean, if you definitely wanted to go full fertility, then you definitely go with Hendricks.
Well, yeah.
Let's see. I mean,
it's too bad Lucille Ball can play television, though.
Oh my God!
I mean, I know they can pull off that scene with CGI, but I just want her around to play television.
That's so creepy. Ugh. Actually, you should have what's her face, Christina Hendricks, do Lucille Ball, and then she could threaten to take him out, and then I'd make that scene way more interesting for at least the male audience. For the female audience, definitely there are some members of the female audience who would appreciate it too, but I don't think that would be too well. It's HBO, so everything's open.
Yeah, like it's HBO, and there's weird sex every 7 chapters. We're gonna see it all.
So
we're gonna see
Sheba. You would, in fact, see Lucy's tits.
We would,
and it would be Christina Hendricks. Ah, yeah. Fucking sold.
Okay, do we have okay, final thoughts, I think?
If you haven't read it, read it. It's great.
It is great stuff. I think it's a fine introduction to Gaiman. It's a fine introduction to urban fantasy.
Yeah.
Without having to have any sexy vampires at all.
Yeah, if you want a non-vampire story, this is kind of a good way to go, and then you can spin off and go to various different series to get your fill of, you know, super supernatural goodness.
Lena? I guess you don't get to have final thoughts yet, do you?
Final thought is I am dying to read the rest of the book. I cannot wait. And even though I did read, what's the plural of synopsis? Clearly one
synopses.
Of you. Okay.
Synopsi.
I was going with synopsi. Even though I've read a bunch of synopses, the little things obviously are not there. And even though I kind of know what happens, I know I'm not spoiled because of it.
Well,
I'm
here's the thing.
To read the rest of it.
You know what? chemically speaking, you enjoy media more if you know what's going to happen.
I kind of think so, too.
Like, people will claim that, no, I was mad at Bioshock for a year because someone told me how it ended. It's like, no, you freaking didn't.
No, you weren't.
Like, you may not have touched it for a year because you were upset with your friend, but when you sat down to play Bioshock, you were counting the foreshadowings.
Yep.
And you loved it.
You saw everything. And you knew it. You loved it.
Alright. So, catch you next month for Redemption in Indigo by Karen Lord.
Which I will, in fact, have finished.
Well, I think that one's a shorter novel.
Probably not as...
Oh, 200 even.
Oh, gosh. Probably not nearly as in-depth as Neil Gaiman.
The third word in the synopsis is intricately woven. You might be in trouble.
Oh, stop it. I'm a horrible procrastinator. Terrible! And I had the dates wrong. This whole month, I have no idea what day of the week it is, what day of the month it is. I thought I had another week until the month was over. So confused.
Oh, no!
You know why? Because Memorial Day weekend was the weekend before the month was over, and it's throwing me off.
See, I don't have that problem, because I'm in Canada. We have our long weekend a week.
Because
we want to get drunk now!
And today is my brother's birthday, and Facebook had to tell me, because I have no idea what day it is anymore. Facebook had to tell me that today is my brother's birthday.
What else is Facebook for but telling you when people's birthdays are, so you can mock them for being old?
He's younger than me, but
you,
I look...
It doesn't matter.
I know. Oh, I know. You're old, ha! Which, frankly, I still enjoy seeing.
I do it to everyone.
I know.
Especially the people who are younger than me. It's like, I'm younger than you. Doesn't matter. You're old today.
I would like to say that my sports team actually won, so all of that panic was for nothing. I'm glad to say that I will not have a heart attack tonight. Thank you very much.
I'm very happy to hear that.
But that means my sister's fantasy basketball team did very well as well.
I seriously have not followed basketball since the 80s, since the Celtics were a white team.
The only white team.
Yeah, back in the short days. But I'm also from Boston, so initially from Boston.
Right. Yeah, no, I've born and raised in Miami. I've been following the team since I was a little kid, so when we were garbage, I was still following him, and there was always hope every year that maybe next year we won't suck. So it's nice to finally have my patience pay off.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but I have to go, unfortunately, as I have to finish up a feature for Tomopop, and I have to work tomorrow, so...
All right, well, good night. See you next time. Leave comments, send voicemails, subscribe, continue to say mean things about Matthew Wayne Selznick.
Oh my god.
Bad guy.
That was craziness like I've never seen. Wow.
He's friends with Tony on Facebook now, and I'm like, really, Tony?
I'm surprised that held. I thought that he would drop him, or one or the other would drop him after that. It was lovely to meet you, Pedro.
It was nice meeting you, too.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit backseatproducers.com for more shows. Join the discussion and make suggestions for books on goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.